from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. After that last hour, I need a drink. And our connection this hour was made at a restaurant or a bar where, according to new research, you are more likely to order a glass of wine or a cocktail over a beer. The Wall Street Journal reports that last year was the first time that U.S. drinkers, especially younger drinkers, chose wine or spirits over beer. Why? Well, taste, I don't know about that, but cost, health reasons are on the list, reported. It's all part of a seismic shift in the beverage industry, and one that has, at least on the national level, beer makers concerned. The Beer Institute reports that drinkers chose beer 49.7% of the time last year, down from 60.8% in the mid-90s. And the decline is sharper among drinkers age 21 to 27. The U.S. CEO of Heineken says it signals a wake-up call for the beer industry, and that has led big beer companies and craft brewers to adopt new strategies to try to attract and grow a customer base. Now, is that going to work, or will wine and spirits continue to rise in the interest when it comes to drink orders? My guests this hour discuss those questions and what the future of the beverage industry might look like. Sometimes you see a national trend. It's not reflected here. Sometimes it is. And certainly the beer industry is not dying. We know there's a lot of things that are thriving here, but the question is, what exactly is going on here? Well, Will Cleveland's probably the guy who knows it better than anybody, a beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle, and he's our break glass in case of emergency beer man. So it's nice to see you. Thank you, Will.
Thanks again for having me.
Also with us is Evie Fanning, the owner of Cheshire, that is happy to carve right into that beer market, I think.
We are. Thank you for having me.
The craft cocktail side. Joe McBain is the owner of Tap and Mallet, not far away.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us, Evan.
Mortal enemy of Cheshire. No.
Oh, I may sneak up there from time to time.
Well, there you go. Nice to have you back, Joe. And Julie Bilecki is the owner of AJ's Beer Warehouse and Rhino Beverage Distributing. Julie, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Will, is it all greatly exaggerated, the death of the beer industry? It's not the death of the beer industry. It's just that when you go from 3 out of 5 drinks at a restaurant or a bar or beer 20 years ago to just under half now, that's a pretty big shift.
Yeah, it's a massive shift, but I think it feeds into the locavore movement. You know, people are more concerned with where their beer is coming from, and I think it's not only for beer, it's for a lot of different goods. I mean, people are, you know, they want to find a Finger Lakes wine, they want to drink some local, you know, craft spirit. So I don't think that this is necessarily a wake-up call or anything, because I think it doesn't take into account, I mean, specifically the article, I don't think it takes into account craft beer all that much. It seems like it's more about the big three and how they're kind of dealing with.
Well, what about the people who want Beechwood aging?
That's fine. I mean, it's still made right down the street in Baldwinsville. So, I mean, there's no shortage of that beer anywhere.
I know, I sound like such a snob. I get it. I'm mostly kidding about that. But I think Will's point is an interesting one because it does fit in this context here. And Joe McBain is the owner of Tap and Mallet, which is where a lot of the people who really love beer will go to drink in Rochester. Is this the kind of article you read that and you roll your eyes, or do you think, yeah, we're seeing a little bit of that? How do you see it?
Well, certainly things change and evolve, and, you know, after reading the article and, you know, various other things from the Brewers Association and whatnot, it's pretty clear that while beer in general is declining, the craft beer segment grew 5% last year, and, you know, one of the interesting things is it represents about 12% of volume, but that is 23% of actual dollars spent on beer in this country, on craft beer. So for me, who's somebody who really specializes in, you know, the very best beer you can find at any one time, those numbers read quite well.
Okay, fair enough. We'll go around the table and just kind of get our first take of these numbers. Julie, how do you view this story here?
I agree that I think there's a national level of concern here, but from our perspective locally and in New York State, I don't see it as applicable. Locally, we have more breweries than we've had since pre-prohibition. Statewide, it's the same. And I think it's going to continue to grow, and people are going to shift towards those types of choices.
Okay. Evie, how did you view this article?
It was interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Beer is not really my specialty. Having read the article and looking back on things, we are selling less beer than we used to, but beer for us is really just not where we focus. I have a light beer and a dark beer. and I think it's just a function of offering more interesting things as alternatives to that. So that's where people turn, and it's, you know, the beer is just kind of there for the people who are dragged along with the cocktail drinkers into my bar.
Well, how often do you have people show up at the bar who assume you'll be able to get a wide range of beers?
It happens, and we don't have a wide range. We send them over to Joe. But we do have the basics. You know, we have something to keep you happy and to keep you drinking. So I think that we're able to keep beer drinkers happy. We're offering them something. But the other thing is often people who are beer drinkers can find something on the cocktail menu that they will love. You know, one of the great things about cocktails is how versatile they are. Cocktail is not a flavor. There's nobody who just doesn't like cocktails. I can make a cocktail that you will love regardless of what your preferences are and what your palate is like.
I'm looking at the numbers, not just sort of the shift, but among 21 to 27-year-olds, it's Anheuser-Busch InBev SA's numbers on this, and I guess that's the full name of the company now. How many conglomerates do we have? Anheuser-Busch InBev SA found that in the latest year of full data, 2016, just 43% of alcohol consumed by drinkers age 21 to 27 was beer. So 57% was not beer. By the way, so 43% of what young drinkers are ordering in bars and restaurants is beer. And just 12 years ago, 10 years ago, it was 65%. So that's the biggest shift, is the young drinking segment. And the question is, does that cement over a lifetime? Do our drinking habits shift? I mean, I don't know what you were doing at 21, Joe, if that was going to reflect exactly what you were going to do for the rest of your life. But does that worry you as the young segment? And I wonder what, you know, sort of your clientele, I mean, you got a broad range. You go into Tap and Mallet, it might be wall-to-wall with people. So same kind of deal with Cheshire or anywhere else. I mean, like, there's not just one profile, but does it skew younger? Does it skew, you know, sort of middle age?
You know, our demographic, I would say, mainly ranges from, you know, late 20s, you know, all the way up to, you know, retirement age. But those statistics are the most worrying, I think, for me, right? Because, you know, everyone, the aging never stops. And, you know, I'm hopeful that trends change, right? And, you know, beer kind of comes back into vogue a little bit with millennials and, you know, maybe as they cruise into parenthood and, you know, the pub and beer becomes a bit more attractive than it is right now. Because it's the same in the UK, from reading this. You know, that younger demographic is drinking generally less high calorie, you know, so like alcoholic seltzers and mm-hmm. wines and so on. And exercising more, but you can exercise and come to the pub too. I would like to say that
you can do both.
You sure can.
Now I wonder if it's like a marketing thing, but then I was thinking all of the marketing about beer that I think is really dumb is mostly the big brands. I mean, one of the big brands had a marketing campaign that had a train riding through a glacier to prove that their beer could get cold.
Coors Light, it's the coldest.
That's
that's how they sell it.
It's very exciting that the bill can get so cold. And the can will tell you when the beer is really cold, ignoring the fact that the colder something gets, the less you can actually taste it. Maybe they think, well, people are stupid. I don't know.
I mean, people like what they like, and I always say drink what you like. But that, I mean,
Glacier Train beer, man. I don't know about that. But I don't know, because that's where my brain went first about why this change is happening. But then again, I mean, most of the people, you know, that I probably interact with, and it's a limited set, want that local. So they're not they're not moved by the big brand advertising.
No.
They don't care about that. They are more interested in what are the 60 things or how many on the menu at Tap and Mallet?
So we would have 30 on tap and a whole pile of bottles, and it changes day to day.
They want to know. They don't want Glacier Train beer. They want some of that stuff, or mm-hmm. you know, however many you're carrying. How many are you carrying?
Thousands.
I mean, they don't really care about that. I mean, certainly they want to know what's, you know, sort of on whether it's classic cocktails or original creations at Cheshire. I think that's what I'm hearing people care about. But I wonder if that favors non-beer as a whole, Will. Or does it not?
I mean, when I post beer articles, they're some of my most read articles of the month, you know, because I do beer and crime. And
crime.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. I love that.
You know, Hops and Homicide, as Jeff Spivak labeled it. But
Jeff's the best.
Oh, he's a gem. But so people are still really interested, you know, like if I get super nerdy about something and write about like some kind of process or some sort of beer style that doesn't do as well as, you know, me writing about, hey, here's the new brewery that's coming to town. It's a new place where you can drink. That's what people are really interested in.
And so this becomes a question of then, how are you reaching people? And what are your clientele? What do they really want? And I think we should go around the table and ask you, and that, again, that's a broad question. Some people just want to drink. They don't want to think about it. But some people really do. Some people are really in touch with, where is it from? Who created it? Is this a new recipe? Is this a classic? What's your take on this? So, Joe, what do people, you know, what's the mindset there on making sure that you're really engaging with people who do want to think about it, who do want information?
Well, okay, specifically regarding beer, because we can hopefully get into this. In order to be successful with beer, I think you have to have more to your business than just beer. So, like, we can talk about, you know, the kind of food aspect and community of the pub,
sure.
Right? But as far as the beer goes, I mean, you know, hops are king right now. And, you know, maybe we can talk about Other Half is coming into town and, you know, into Bloomfield. And, you know, they're one of the most exciting breweries in the country. And people literally line up around the block to buy that type of beer. And people are interested in trying things that they have heard about and that other people are excited about, and you know, new is very much a big part of what we sell, which, you know, often it's hops, but there's very little brand loyalty,
okay,
right, which is different than like the Cold Train beer that you were talking about, whereas people much more associate themselves with a, you know, I'm a Coors drinker, I'm a Bud drinker, you know. My arena, it's more stylistic, not a lot of brewery loyalty.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So less brand loyalty at that level, more mm-hmm. about what's interesting, what's getting buzz, mm-hmm. what might be new. Yeah, okay. That's very curious.
The flavor train, as opposed to
the flavor train, as opposed to the glacier train. And by the way, if you're a glacier train beer fan, call the program and tell me why Coors over Bud. I never fully understand that, but Joe, I think you have on this program in the past defended the consistency of those brands. They are consistent. They know exactly what they're mm-hmm. doing.
Yeah, you know exactly what you're going to get, and you're going to get it every time.
Absolutely right. Okay, yep. And there's nothing wrong with that. Julie, how do you approach this question?
I agree with Joe. I think there's a time and place for each beer, and a different mood, a different setting, a different group of friends or family that you're with that makes each one appropriate. But I think for us, we appreciate each set of customer and each interest that they have. We look to educate. I think the more that you can educate, when someone comes in and says, my son's coming to town, I'm interested in these things, what can you show me? Those are my favorite customers because I love walking around and talking to them, more directly trying to get them to try things too. Or, you know, if they're coming in saying, I'm interested in a certain style, what can you tell me? We've also seen a shift, like Joe, to the, you know, what's next. And we have a lot of customers that know when our deliveries come in, what we can be expecting. They're following breweries on social media and asking us when we're going to receive the beer that was just released at the brewery. So those types of customers take a different approach too. You need to be relevant. You need to be current. You need to also participate in social media to get them to come to your place. We've seen a lot of competition in the past 4 or 5 years as the market's expanded in Rochester, and you know, keeping your share of it is important.
All right, so a little bit less about brand loyalty, some interesting, thoughtful approaches on the beer side. On the cocktail side, I would assume it's less about brand loyalty. I suppose if you're drinking,
there still is some, but I think I agree people are getting away from it. So when people come in, they don't ask for a particular brand or a particular distillery anymore. They ask for a type of spirit, or they tell me a flavor profile that they prefer. Mm-hmm. That's true. As far as, you know, what I'm hearing is that people are more interested in what they're drinking. It's not just about getting a buzz. It's not just about the effects of it, but people want to know where this is coming from, what's involved in making it. You know, they want to know about sustainable practices or, you know, green kinds of things, you know, what kinds of organizations you're supporting. All of that becomes relevant with people making their choices. And so with cocktails, as far as where it's made, it really doesn't get any closer. It's made in front of you. You know, you're talking to the person who's making your drink, and they can customize it for you. And so, you know, I can talk about where this bourbon is coming from and how it's made and what kinds of casks it's aged in and for how long. And then I talk about, you know, why, you know, these are the things that we're going to pair it with, and this is how we're going to season it. And I think it's also like in that same spirit of wanting to know about these things, people want to participate. It's more interactive. It's something that you can learn, you know. So people ask me to write down recipes for them. People ask me where they can get this spirit or that one, so that they can try making these things on their own. Also,
I'm already digging this story, Will, and I'm thinking if I'm doing your job, I would probably get really wonky. And I think a lot of your readers probably do dig that, don't they?
A lot of them do. Yeah.
They probably want that level of detail.
We have a very passionate and thirsty audience in Rochester. It's allowed me to write a lot of these stories, and I'm thankful for that. But it's been interesting to watch, just because, you know, as the Rochester beer scene has grown, I've been able to kind of chronicle and document a lot of that, and kind of tell people about, you know, the stories behind the people who are opening these places, and, you know, like the new towns, like Avon got a brewery, and, you know, Spencerport has a brewery, you know, like things like that, where, you know, you see it popping up on a hyper local scale. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that the article doesn't take into consideration, is, you know, the growth. Like Joe said, you know, craft was up 5% last year. And it's because, you know, you have these small breweries that are concerned with, you know, making just enough to supply their tap room, and then maybe, you know, 10 or 15 draft accounts or something like that. You know, they're not packaging to get on a Wegman shelf, or, you know, order to get their beer in Boston, you know, or something like that. So I think Evie was talking a little bit about that too, you know, concerned with just, you know, the stories behind where their beverages are coming from.
I see our phones ringing, and we're going to get to Keith. Randy, we'll get to you in just a second. Listeners, if you want to weigh in on when you go out to eat at a restaurant, or if you go out to a bar, are you more likely to order beer, wine, or cocktails? The trends, according to recent data from everybody from Anheuser-Busch InBevSA to reporting in the Wall Street Journal, Business Insider tracking these trends, Americans, particularly young Americans, young drinkers, are ordering beer less often. Doesn't mean the beer is dying. It means that craft beer is growing, the big brands are hurting a little bit, and Americans as a whole are moving a little bit in the direction of cocktails and wine. Now, why is that? Well, according to at least the reporting that we're seeing, there's a number of factors, but a lot of young drinkers think wine or cocktails are healthier than beer. Well, here's an email from a listener named Adam, who just says, Evan, it's about how heavy the drink is. If this is about going to a restaurant, I can't drink more than one beer. If I'm going out just to a bar, I might be more willing to order a beer. So, okay, let's hit that before we get to your phone calls. Joe, Adam walks into your place and says, I guess I'll order a beer. That's all you got, right? But I'm worried it's going to be heavy. I'm worried it's going to weigh me down, and typically I'll order cocktail or, you know, wine for that reason. How do you have that conversation with someone who's worried about how heavy a beer would be?
Well, we can talk about different types of beer, you know. So, you know, perhaps we would suggest something that's a little bit lighter, like a, you know, slightly sour goes. Maybe it's got a little bit of fruit in it. I don't think it's that much heavier, you know, honestly. And you don't have to drink it at, like, quite the pace that one might think, that, you know, you're pounding down a, you know, a Bud or something. Yeah, I think there's plenty of options out there. You know, like Belgian wheat beer, it's, you know, it's light, it's crisp. You know, it's not as carbonated. And I think the carbonation is part of that kind of full factor, too.
Yeah, sort of that lighter on its feet sort of feeling. Mm-hmm. How do you hit that one, Julie?
I was reading some feedback to this article as well, and the comment was, if I'm going to a bar and I can have a beer, it's not going to have the same alcohol content, and I can drive home. I can safely drive home, where if I have something heavier, I'm not the biggest person in the world, I'm not going to be getting behind the wheel.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, Abby, I think Adam's feeling about beer, I'm that's sort of where I am, I think. I do feel like I can handle a cocktail a little bit more than, like, a big glass of beer, big pint.
I think at the very least with beer, you're consuming more volume. That's what it is. I think you would feel fuller after consuming two pints versus two cocktail glasses, right? So I think it's not necessarily about the flavor, because certainly there are light beers and there are heavy cocktails, and there are, you know, there are big chewy wines and there are really light effervescent ones. So I think the flavors are fairly versatile, but yeah, I can see not wanting to drink three pints full of liquid. And instead, you know, it feels different to drink 5 ounces. So I think maybe that's where the light and heavy comes from. Okay. But as far as the alcohol, I think, in a drink, 5 ounces of wine, 12 ounces of beer, 3 ounces of booze, you're drinking the same amount of alcohol. And in terms of calories or ability to drive, that shouldn't really be making much of a difference.
Well, on the subject of health, Sarah in Rochester has a question for the panel. Go ahead, Sarah.
Thanks so much. So I have celiac disease. So I adhere to a gluten-free diet. And throughout the past 10 years that I've had celiac disease, I've noticed a huge upswing in the fattiness of the gluten-free diet. And more and more places are offering, you know, increasing their gluten-free offerings, including Tap and Mallet, which I so appreciate. Love that you carry the Glutenberg IPA. But, you know, regardless of celiac disease, people are way into the gluten-free diet. And I'm just curious what folks think about, like, kind of the fad of that and how that's impacting, like, millennial drinking choices.
That's a very interesting question, Sarah. And I want to be careful, so maybe producer Megan Mack will fact-check me on this one. I'm pretty sure that, first of all, celiac disease is definitely real, and I respect that, and some people really struggle with that. But the notion of sort of gluten sensitivity versus actual celiac disease is a lot more medically questioned by the establishment, I believe. And I think we did see a fad swinging in that direction, which has pulled back a bit, given some medical expertise saying, if you've got celiac, you got celiac, gluten sensitivity. But I'm going to be careful. And doctors, call me or email me, because I'm the first guy to tell you I'm wrong. Julian Joe?
I mean, I guess I'm probably the best to answer this as somebody who serves a lot of food. So if you went back, I would say maybe the peak of it was around 6 years ago in terms of people that we had coming in to dine with us who were asking questions regarding gluten-free options that we had. And, and we really added a lot to our menu and made a lot of clear distinctions on the menu as far as what things would be suitable for that type of diet. And, certainly, celiacs is a known diagnosable, situation that's serious for somebody who has that. But in general, and it was so large in terms of the requests we were having from then to now, it's significantly dropped off in terms of the amount of gluten-free, offerings that we serve.
So the demand is much different now.
It's much different, but it's still something that is very much warranted on our menu and was an adjustment that has been has been good and important. And the other thing is beer sales, So typically for us, it would be like, well, we always have like nice wines, and then we have two different beers. Glutenberg was mentioned, Stone does another one, and then ciders, of course. So hopefully there's a range of options there for people. But I would say the gluten-free beer sales have slowed.
Same for you, Julie?
We do have a lot of customers that call and ask or discover that they have some health issue, and they ask, where is our cider section? Do we have gluten-free beers? We will get that through phone calls, people coming in, social media inquiries. We do keep a gluten-free section. I'm a little crazy about freshness and dates, so I do find that those things tend to expire more than other beers. We do also have to be careful that certain of the gluten-free beers are gluten-reduced. So someone with a very serious celiac issue needs to still avoid a couple of them. The cider sales are big.
How, by the way, is the critic here? How are the beers that are gluten-free?
Oh, they're fine. It's not something I normally seek out, but it's been interesting too.
Fine is the kind of thing you say when you say, like, hey, do you like my shirt?
No, they're solid.
It's fine.
But
you don't like it.
They're not, but I'm thankful that I don't have to deal with any of those issues. But there's a number of breweries locally who have moved to gluten-reduced beers. I mean, I know that Swiftwater's has moved to kind of make sure all of their beers are gluten-reduced. So there's definitely been some movement by local brewers to fulfill some of those needs too.
And I'm totally ignorant on this. On the cocktail side of their question.
Hey, great news. Lots of gluten-free spirits. Lots of gluten-free cocktails. And it's not like a diet cocktail, right? Like very, very naturally of their own, lots of cocktails can be gluten-free. Lots of cocktails can be sugar-free. Most recently I'm hearing about the keto diet. We've got a keto cocktail for you.
You have a keto cocktail?
I'm sure we do.
Oh, I see. It's not like a section of the menu for keto.
No, not necessarily. But really, the fact that cocktails are so customizable, that really whatever your preferences or whatever your restrictions, we can accommodate that on the spot.
But here's where I'm going to disagree with the listener on why people might be shifting, particularly younger drinkers. Again, 21 to 27, if you're in that age group, you're drinking less beer than you were significantly 10 years ago, and more cocktails and more wine. Melanie says, I think wine and cocktails get you there quicker, so to speak, and young people are learning that. I don't think that's true. No, you do think that's true.
I think, nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so, as Hamlet said.
I don't think that's motivating a population of drinkers just to get drunk more quickly. I think most people, I hope, aren't just drinking to get inebriated.
No, but it is alcohol. I mean, the bottom line is we're not drinking juices and yogurts, right? Yes, we appreciate the history and the story, and the craft. But also, we do want to get a buzz. And People swear that they get a different kind of buzz from different kinds of drinks, or one gets them there faster than another. I don't know if that's really true, but it is if you want it to be. I mean, really,
confirmation
I think that's
bias
true.
Is amazing.
Totally.
It is. Do you think, Julie, make anything of that, the whole getting you there quicker?
There's such a variety of alcohol contents between liquors, between ciders, between beers, between wine. You know, you can have a beer that's 3%. You can have a beer that's 20%. You know,
I'm sorry. What?
Is that what you drink, Will?
We had one yesterday, though. We had a Brewery Black Tuesday, 19.9%.
19.9.
So it's all in the eye of the beholder. If I want to have a 12% beer, I'm going to, you know, kind of taper what my next beer is going to be if I'm going to have a next beer. But if
that
I'm
is
the, outside
But it's also a beer that I enjoyed over like a 4-hour period.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. You think people are trying to drink to get drunk?
You know, well, they're not going to come see me if that's honestly their motivation.
Or
Evie, for that matter, because there's far
more
economical.
They're going to come see me.
Oh, you are not economical.
I dare you to find a cheaper alcohol per buck in town.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. It's true, though.
Bit of a used car salesman right there.
All right. So just in terms of fact-checking my reporting on this, because I want to be careful on the celiac disease versus gluten sensitivity. Vox reports that about 1% of Americans have celiac disease. And according to the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness, many of them do go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years. Even more rare are genuine wheat allergies, which affect an estimated 0.1% of people in westernized countries. So... if the narrative you heard, I think Joe said maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, was a lot more about not just celiac disease, but gluten sensitivity, and people would tell you, well, I don't have celiac, but I'm gluten sensitive. The numbers say for every 10 people with actual celiac disease, there's only one with actual gluten sensitivity. It's not very much. So it's a very, very small portion of the population.
Just got an interesting text message from a local brewer. Bruce from Three Heads, he said, beer in decline, ? Ha ha ha. We're up every bit of 30% this year.
Again, absolutely. And you know, the local craft breweries are doing wonderfully. The larger number, when you hear that beer, quote, is in decline, is generally the big brands. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even necessarily mean Rochester Finger Lakes as a market. It's just interesting looking how we fit in and what that means. But it's great to see that the small, the mid-sized, the local, the new, the startups are doing wonderfully. That's... and I'm not surprised to hear that, by the way. Okay, let me back to your phone calls. Keith in Farmington. Go ahead, Keith.
I got a comment and a question. I was in Europe for a couple of weeks, late spring, early summer, and the most popular beer I ran into, and I can't drink it because it's way too bitter, was Heineken. I just couldn't believe how widespread it is out through Europe. And I'm talking from Amsterdam to Rome, back up to Paris, back up to London. The one thing I did find surprising was I couldn't drink any beer until I got to Rome and asked him just for the heck of it if they had Corona, and they did. And why is Corona, or it seems like Mexican beers are much, how I would describe them, as smoother. For that reason, I can't drink a beer that's bitter. What makes a beer bitter? And I remember you're talking about adult drinks. Tried to get fresh iced tea in Europe, and it was non-existent. Even in London, everything was in a bottle.
All right, so Keith, I don't. The audio quality makes me think I'm drunk. I don't know what you were calling from, but let me. I think what you were asking was about what makes beer bitter, and is Mexican beer generally smoother?
Sure. so hops are almost entirely used in beer for bittering purposes, and they would go early in the boil, and those early additions of hops would translate into bitterness in the overall beer, and then they'd throw in a whole bunch at the end, which would give it a nice kind of hoppy smell. So that's your bitterness. If you want less bitter, you put in less hops. And are Mexican lagers less bitter? Yeah, I find them fairly low bitterness, and you cram a lime in there, and who knows?
But does everybody agree with that generally?
Does that sum it up?
Yeah, Joe's spot on.
Okay.
Keith, I hope we answered your questions. I have no idea what's going on with iced tea. I don't know why you're ordering Corona in Rome. I did meet an American family from Texas who were in Tuscany, excited to find a McDonald's, and I nearly fell over dead. But you know what they say, when in Rome, drink Corona. Randy, next on the phone. Go ahead, Randy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I write for the Times of Wayne County, and I write about the beer industry every once in a while, mostly on wine. But a couple of statistics that were quite interesting that might add to the conversation. Over the last 12 years, the craft beer industry has grown from almost nothing to now 22% of the beer sales nationwide. And there is a direct decline of overall beer sales. But as you said earlier, the big three are getting hit the worst. Budweiser, over that same period of growth in the craft industry, has been a 50 million barrel decline with Budweiser. And with their market statistics showing that they're holding on to just men over 55 as their primary market. So I think that tells you a lot about what's going on with that industry. If you look at New York City itself, wine sales actually are the highest among both craft beer, or I should say beer overall, and cocktails. So, you know, the trend in New York City is definitely in the higher wine consumption, not only here, but nationwide.
Yeah, Randy, that's interesting, because now I think of not just Evie Fanning's Cheshire, but that's right on top of Solera, which is a wine bar downstairs. So you get the direct comparison, and you get more traffic on which end, upstairs or downstairs?
Currently, we get more traffic upstairs, but it also depends on the day of the week, and it also depends on the time of the night.
Is that okay? That's
it's true, yeah. So they get busy at different times.
Is there an annual one side does better than the other, though, expectation?
Do you mean just in terms of traffic?
Yeah, how just many in terms of sales, in terms of what you're making?
Well, that's a very different question.
Yeah, that's right? A good point. Because
which one makes more money versus which one? Yeah. I would say we have more people at Cheshire. It's a very different atmosphere, and that's happened organically also. It's not like we instilled it that way. Cheshire has created for itself a mood and a tone that's different than Solera. It's more upbeat. It's a little bit noisier. It's more of a party, whereas Solera is more romantic and quiet and loungy. So I think people are more in the mood to party.
Now, I do wonder if, because Evie's making the point that if for the wine drinking crowd, the average sale may be bigger, so you may get a smaller total of people in the door.
It totally depends. It totally depends on what your business is about. You know, if you're interested in introducing people to wines that are unusual, you know, rare, something new to them, you might be willing to make less money on a glass of that wine and to make a customer happy and to create a loyal customer. If you're interested in moving lots of wine, you're going to do it in a very different direction. We're more interested in the kind of wine that we pour, mostly because we like drinking there as well. So, you know, so that's kind of our focus. But I wonder, you know, as we're talking about these trends and what I read in the article, overall it looks like the beer industry is concerned that only 50% of people these days are choosing to drink beer, which is still more than people who are choosing to drink wine or people who are choosing to drink beer. So I wonder if it's just a balancing out. You know, people are interested in quality, I think. People want a good product. And so there are options now more than earlier to have a good cocktail, to have a great glass of wine. And so maybe we're just kind of balancing that out to a place where we have, you know, we have room for drinking any kind of alcohol.
That's a great point. I mean, if beer is still winning with a plurality, you still have to combine cocktails and wine just to equal what beer is selling in this country. And so I'd say beer is doing just fine. So the headlines being that beer is like in decline, it's all relative here. I think beer, there's a reason people want Will Cleveland to keep working for the Democrat and Chronicle forever. And I hope you do.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. We're going to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back to more of your phone calls. Paul will take your call. By the way, I want to read, SK emails us and says, thank you for highlighting the difference between celiac disease and, quote, gluten sensitivity. Gluten sensitivity isn't real, and it honestly can make things more complicated for those of us with celiac disease, i.e. restaurants not taking it as seriously. Thank you, SK. Sorry to hear about what you're dealing with. And again, for folks with celiac disease, very real, really, really tough. I certainly feel for you. But thank you for the email there. And when we come back from the break, what we're going to do is we'll reset. We'll tell you who our guests are this hour and why we're talking about beer, cocktails, and wine. And our various guests here have other things to tell you about, where they are, where you can find them. They even have some actual parties coming up, I think. whether it's beer or cocktail or wine related. So that's all coming up next here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the World Affairs Council of Rochester is bringing in a new slate of expert speakers this fall, and we meet the first one of them on Tuesday. It's Dr. Eric Olson, who's coming to Rochester to lecture on the subject of Mexico's evolving criminal landscape and what it says about the United States. With all the news and politics and policy regarding Mexico, it's a timely discussion. That's Tuesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. We're here because talking about beer sales in this country, because on the macro side, on the big picture side of beer, beer sales are down in this country, most sharply among drinkers aged 21 to 27, who are turning more often in favor of cocktails or wine when they go out. That doesn't mean beer is dying. In fact, craft beer is up. It's up across the country. It's up in many, in like sort of anecdotal cases here in Rochester, right? Will Cleveland from the Democrat and Chronicle?
I mean, we've gone from three breweries in this area to, I mean, just in Monroe County, we have 25, 10 in the city.
So an eightfold increase means that who knows when saturation happens, but, you know, in the Finger Lakes wine industry, everybody thought when they got, not everybody, people who aren't that smart, like me, thought when they got to 100 bonded wineries, that would be the saturation point. And now they're sitting there at, what, 130? So, yeah, the growth has been remarkable. And so this is not a case of beers dying and everything else is thriving. It's big brands seeing sales decline, but not necessarily the specialized stuff, the specialty, the crafts. And they're doing really well. So Will Cleveland's here, beer columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Evie Fanning is here, the owner of Cheshire in Rochester, which, by the way, is where?
647 South Avenue in the South Wedge.
And you got a party coming up?
I've got a party coming up. I'd like to invite you and your listeners. This Saturday, September 22nd, Cheshire is turning six, and we're having an anniversary party. The theme is Alice in Wonderland. It's going to be every bit as insane as you think. We're all a little mad there. We will have cocktails that make you taller and cocktails that make you smaller. Can your beer do that?
I already have plans, though. I'm going to be at Tappan Bell.
You're going to have to... Oh, okay. Well, all of you come over.
It's a short walk.
Yeah.
It's a short walk. Okay.
Oh, wait.
That's on Saturday.
That's on Saturday the 22nd.
Saturday night, Cheshire turning six. Tappan Mallet is a short walk away, which is where, Joe McBain?
381 Gregory Street. A stone's throw down the street. And you can stand on a keg if you want to be taller.
How long have you been open?
We're going to have our 11th anniversary November 2nd.
11?
Hasn't time flown, huh?
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. And Julie Bilecki is the owner of AJ's Beer Warehouse, which is where?
175 Clay Road in Henrietta.
How long have you been there?
We will be celebrating our 5th anniversary in November.
My goodness, where has the time gone? How long have you been writing about beer for the Democrat and Chronicle?
A little over 4 years.
What year is it? Oh my gosh, I would have said like a year or two. It's amazing how time flies. So we're talking about all of the different reasons that we see these shifts happening and in sales and what that means. And so let me grab a phone call and then we're going to get back to this question on what a big brand is, because some of the big brands are trying to gobble up some of the littler brands, and I wonder what the impact is and what that means for quality, for interest, et cetera. But let me go ahead and get our next phone call, which is Paul in Rochester. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi. I don't drink alcohol at all. So when I go to a restaurant or a beer store, I'm looking for non-alcoholic options.
Yes.
So there are existing NA beers like O'Doul's and whatever, but there are also up and coming exclusively NA craft breweries. There are, I think, five in North America and more in Europe. So curious, I mean, I know you can get mocktails at Cheshire. Those are great. But curious if you guys are paying any attention to that, thinking about stocking those. And yeah, here's some of your thoughts.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call.
Yeah. I think as far as stocking them, if they're available, we'll carry them. That's what we try to keep a variety for everyone. We do have quite a variety of NA beers. They're just not as easy to seek out, similar to gluten. I have friends who, you know, send me pictures of beers and say, can you get this for me? And it's in Washington State. And I say, I'd love to. But part of it is getting the channels to getting the access. And it's also making sure that there's enough support for those brands that the sales allow it to be an experience, you know, that distributors are willing to take on. So I did notice that there's a brewery that came out with a hopped seltzer, a non-alcoholic hop seltzer. So that should be coming to the market soon. Keep your eye out for it. I'm excited to try it.
Okay, Joe?
We carry one, Erdinger. It's a German brewery specializing in wheat beers. I've tried a bunch of non-alcoholic beers over the years and found them to be, you know, fairly unpleasant in the most part. But I found that, you know, I liked Bitburger, which is another German one, more of a blonde lager. The Erdinger we carry is a wheat. And they're the two that I've carried over the years and found to be the most enjoyable. We carry one, just based upon demand. I don't feel we need more than that. But having tried a bunch, I felt like that was a really good offering.
Okay, non-alcoholic cocktails.
So being selling alcohol on premise, we have to think about that. We have to worry about that. With every group of people, somebody's got to drive them all home.
Yeah.
Less so now with Uber and Lyft in town. But still, yeah, we do have to take care of the people who are trying to be responsible. And again, cocktails are multifaceted. So you can still enjoy all the other parts of it. You know, it's still cool to watch somebody make your drink, and it's still cool to be able to customize it however you like. And we'll still do all of that, and it'll taste great. Of course, no buzz. Okay. But we do actually have a section of the menu for virgin cocktails.
What's the most common one you sell?
Faux 75. And that's based on the French 75. French 75 is a gin-based drink with lemon sugar and champagne on top. It's delicious. I recommend it. The Faux 75 has that same flavor profile. We put it in the same glass. We garnish it with a lemon peel the same way. It looks indistinguishable. And it tastes good. It's pretty, and it has no alcohol in it.
Well, I come back to your phone calls, I want to just ask you, sort of off topic but interesting, you just mentioned Uber and Lyft, which we'll probably have another conversation on coming up here to kind of check in on the state of that industry. You do see a difference in terms of...
I do, yeah.
In terms of like drunk driving and whatnot?
Well, I'm not... I hope that there's a difference in terms of drunk driving. I do see a difference in terms of couples coming in, and in the past one of them would be not drinking. And now they're both drinking, and it's a different kind of dynamic.
Or a group of people.
Or a group of people, right. Yeah. Less often is there now a designated driver.
Because of that availability. Mm-hmm. Joe, same?
No, honestly, I was kind of expecting a bit more of a spike in business when it came in, and we didn't, I can't say that we've seen any significant change from it.
That's very interesting.
I mean, I personally use it and love it all the time. But yeah, like business-wise, I didn't see the change that I thought we would.
That's a very interesting difference there. Okay, something to explore. Let me grab Alex in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi. I've got a question for everyone in general. I know this article speaks in general about the millennial population and that they're going through a decline in actually drinking more beverage, but it seems to me that in this area there's more of an older generation that's turning away from the macro product to the craft product. And in that respect, what you may lose in your millennial generation drinking some of these, you know, macro beers, you're making up for it in the older population, learning that it isn't just Bud Miller, Coors, Genesee that's available, but there's other craft options and tastes. And so some of what's lost in the younger generation is gained in the older generation discovering craft beer.
It's an interesting idea, Alex. Julie?
Full disclosure, that was my husband.
Oh.
He tried to hide his voice a little bit.
No,
all right.
He couldn't.
You
do
know
it.
That man. Okay.
I do.
All right, so you're going to endorse what he says.
Well, he did share with me when we talked about this last night his personal experience, and that his father was a Labatt Jenny drinker his whole life. He would go and buy beer for his dad and bring it to the house for parties. At our wedding, we introduced craft beer to many people in his extended family, and now they come and shop. They drive 3 hours to come and shop and come and see us. And my father-in-law can't get enough of those, you know, high-alcohol stouts. My mother-in-law was a wine drinker, never had an ounce of beer pass her lips. Now we keep her fully supplied in cider. So, if that's indicative, my mother, she is a wine drinker and she likes spirits. She doesn't drink a lot, but when she does, she enjoys a goes, you know, a citrusy sour. She'll sit down and have some of that with me. So I see, again, it goes back to education. There's new products. They're getting beyond what they grew up drinking.
Yeah. Well, can you track readership in any way? Do you think there's something that lines up there?
I mean, I can't specifically track, like, you know, the demographics of who's...
Every single reader.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, we do a you know, we do watch our metrics to see, you know, like how many people are accessing an article, and, you know, we're kind of more concerned with engagement time and, you know, seeing how long someone spends in an article and, you know, recirculate it on the website and things like that. So, you know, you find you put more links to some of your beer content in there. You know, if I have like a big breaking beer story, I'll put links to other content in there, or, and, you know, more recent stuff that I've written. And, you know, you can see people, you know, click through and click on those articles too.
I'm looking at WXXI TV's Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Brewed in New York series.
Those have been really well done.
They're awesome. Yeah. They've been doing really, really well. And, you know, I mean, our television audience is pretty diverse. It might skew a little bit older, but has had no trouble finding traction there. Thursday nights, 8:30, WXXI TV, Brewed in New York. Tons of interest there. What do you make of what Alex said there, Joe?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you're talking about the older generation, you know, these are people that grew up drinking beer that was very limited in its range of flavor. And, you know, over time, they have tried new things, and it's a very wide flavor spectrum that's available in beer when you go to somewhere like Alex or Julie's place or my place. And if you are open-minded, it's hard to not come away with at least a few things that you're like, you know what, that was pretty good, and you can go back to that in the future, you know?
All right, so before we lose the hour, a couple of things I want to hit. I want to hit the subject of price, which these articles talked about. The change in price over time, the biggest rise in price has been beer. We'll get back to that in a second. But then there's also the question of what is a big brand, and they're gobbling up some of the smaller brand, the craft brands. Is that a good trend, a bad trend? Does that bother you when you see it, Joe?
It bothers me. I just prefer to support independently owned breweries, and I think that that's good for you know, the longevity in terms of like the creative direction, and it's because it's been so exciting, and it's through independent entrepreneurial spirit that a lot of these things have really blossomed, and it's been so successful that the big breweries have lost the market share like we've talked about, and they are now gobbling up, you know, medium-sized breweries and, you know, continuing to brand them as craft breweries. Right, so it's, you know, kind of crafty beer.
Well, you see they happen locally with Constellation.
Sure,
with the regional brands they've acquired.
Right, so they're not happy that they've lost their percentage, because they are the ones losing their percentage. It's not really the small little guys at all. In fact, they're doing quite well. And it'll be tough for the middle guys, because the real small little guys are very popular. You know, they're making cool stuff. And they're so small that they just sort of fly under the radar, and they always will. But then, you know, your medium-sized breweries, they're kind of getting pinched now on both sides, right? You've got the really big guys who are trying to re-exert on the shelves with their stuff, and then you've got the little guys who are just doing really well, and they're taking a bunch of, you know, people's beer dollars out of the market. So I think the small little local brewery scene is really healthy and is going to thrive for, you know, a long, long time. And you won't see as many of the kind of like multi-state brands,
yeah,
quite the same level you do now.
Yeah, Julie, how do you feel when you see that those sort of conglomerations grabbing them up?
Well, from the retail perspective, as soon as it hits the press, we get a pop in interest in that brewery. When Ballast Point was acquired, and it still continues to have some strength in the local community because of the now local tie to that national brand. The same thing goes for Funky Buddha, which was just acquired. Everybody is asking where the beer is, when are we going to see it? I spoke with Funky Buddha several years ago, and they said, you know, we'd love to send you some product, but we can't get out of Florida. So perhaps this is the opportunity for us to see some of the beers that were regional that aren't accessible to us. There's a positive to that. But I agree with Joe and the super local movement. We represent 23 New York State breweries. Every time I have meetings with them, you know, we keep saying the highest and best use for them is their pint sales in their pubs or in their tasting rooms. So I think, you know, still drawing the crowds to the breweries, having the local beers available in, you know, the neighborhood bars, saturating their 5-mile radius, moving out from there, I think is the right approach to combat some of the middle-sized breweries that are being acquired and now have more marketing.
All right, down to our last 90 seconds. According to recent reports on this, beer prices rose 42% between the year 2000 and 2017. Wine prices only up 11% in the same time. Spirits prices up 19%. How much does that matter in the way people are choosing to spend and drink?
I think really not that much.
Interesting.
We rather spend the time searching out companies and spirits that we can respect in terms of their history, their practices. So we tend to go more that way, be guided by that.
Julie, you agree with that?
I don't think there's as price sensitivity as it is quality and diversity and new experiences.
Okay, Joe?
I mean, beer's still an affordable drink, and good beer costs more money to make. It requires more and better ingredients, and my experience is people are willing to pay for a better pint.
All right, so better pint. Real quick, if I'm going to your establishment, or if you're reviewing one, somebody wants something interesting to drink tonight or this weekend, what should we get at Tap and Melt?
Oh, gosh.
We got to pick one.
I got to pick one. Come down and try the new Sloop Juice Bomb, Hudson Valley Beer. They disappeared for a while. They're back. We're excited to have them.
Julie.
Single Cut. We have more variety available consistently now and more quantity.
Cheshire Solera.
Sazerac at Cheshire. It is the gateway drug into whiskey. And if you don't love it, I'll drink it for you. And at Solera, I love the German Riesling that we're pouring by the glass. Definitely try that.
Okay, and Will, what excites you most right now?
I recommend just going to a different local brewery you haven't been to before. Like, we're going to Albany this weekend. I'm going to check out 3 new breweries, and I'm really excited for that. So yeah, that's what I love to do.
That's a great idea. In the wine industry and in the beer industry, we're really fortunate to have access to so many. And you bring a lot of them on the page to us, Will Cleveland. So we'll see you in the Democrat and Chronicle.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the great work you do. Joe McBain, see you at Tap and Mallet.
Yes, you will. Thanks, Evan.
Abby Fanning, see you at Cheshire and Solera. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Julie Bilecki, AJ's Beer Warehouse and Rhino Beverage Distributing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, off to one of these establishments. Talk to you tomorrow.